Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cries the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance.
Freaky Darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Phil and Getty, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please don't forget to check out our other After Midnight shows. Join Neutron tomorrow as the After Midnight Bomber, and then delve into a world of strange magic within your hair and dust and Victoria Frost. Friday's a split between Crawling Into the Darkness with Pam and Break On Through. And Saturday, come dance to the tune of Aphasiana, teaching you how to be part sinner, part saint. And on Monday mornings, join Victoria Frost as she features the hearts of late night poets and Black Lace Diaries. Now, these shows were designed so you can color outside the lines with ritual emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. So pull up a chair, relax, and open your minds. I'm Rex, and my co-host Pam Ray and I can't wait to get into and read your words. As tonight, we delve into a little bit of Clive Barker quotes. How you doing, Pam?
Oh, I'm doing great. You know, it's such an excellent topic you picked out. People are really inspired, and I'm looking forward to the show, reading and commenting, and of course, as always, hanging out with you and poets. So, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing just fine.
Awesome.
What's going on?
Awesome. All right, very cool, very cool. So, let me go ahead and bring on a couple of guests, and it's always nice to have people join us. And so let me just mosey back to the studio, and I'm bringing on Babbler and Aphasiana. So welcome to both of you. Glad you could join us.
Thanks, Pam.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, Bab. Hello, Aphasi.
Mm-hmm. Hello.
How are you guys doing?
Good.
Well, it's no longer my work day, so I'm better than I was earlier.
There you go. Well, all right, Pam, what say we kick some gears and see what Clive has to offer?
Sounds good to me. Now, I hope I'm not hallucinating here. I don't see a write from either one of you. Are you both here just to hang out and help with reads?
You're right.
Yep, nothing from me.
All right. Sounds good. Glad to have you both here. Well, in that case, let me go ahead and grab the poem that I originally planned for us to start with. And, all right. And... There we go. Finally, someone's got the Jeopardy music going.
Yeah, Rex was doing the Twilight Zone, I think.
Oh,
yeah,
the Twilight Zone sounds a lot like Jeopardy music. you might need to practice. All right. Up first is One Man's Pornography by Peter Solway. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
All right. One Man's Pornography, Another Man's Philosophy, Lounging Back, Sucking Pipe, Playboy with Thought, Watching the Action Slow Down, Speed It Up, Human Rabbits Added, Not Directly Participating, Voyeurism, The Latest Fashion, Cameraman, Doing an Income, Watches at Home, Unlooking Philosopher, Philosophizing Big Picture, Thinking Beyond Semantics or Rhythmic Bums, Immediate Desire, Home Runs, Speculating on Motivations, Save Some Chestnuts, Ugly Winter Around Corner, Drugs to Mainline on Florida Vacation, Sleep to All Hours, Look Prince Prick. Ophelia enjoys being celibate upon pink silk sheets. Stare from abstract ceilings, French chandeliers, Babes of Reasons, Slap of Enlightened Men. Overdose of Guillotine, definitely not Offsprings to Orphanage, Bequeathed, grandparents in motorhome, guiding hand and tongue, self-expression of an ad woman. Going penthouse up, pushing right buttons, making an independent fortune, CEO of the fucking moon. Knowing house of the rising sun, strings to forever tune. Smiling and grunting's limitation, yes of Joyce, Picasso's exaggeration, book signings, Dickensian recitations, fame in the red carpet lane. Tarzan and Jane and her sister teen, lusting during the monkey scene, not really blonde and brunette, fat and skinny, Galapagos twins, not likely. Art's vain mirror on reality, Narcissus in ecstasy, illusion bombs, cutting to come scene, monkeys going ape. Poem. All right, there's a little bit of twisted thought. All right, Pam, you love Peter so much, you get to kick it off. Hello? It's awful quiet in here. Am I alone?
I hear you. I don't hear anyone
I'm
else,
here.
But I hear you.
Well, all right. Then let's start with you, Babbler. What do you think? Since Pam decided to go AWOL.
I liked it. You know, Peter always has such an interesting way of phrasing things. You know, for me, this poem is kind of saying that, you know, sexuality kind of slows down intellectualism, and yet they're still emerging. Like, you can't have one without the other because sex creates people, but it also distracts them from being as enlightened as they can be. At least that's what I get out of it. And some of these images are really, really almost comical to me. Like, I just... And of course, now I say that, and then I'm hunting for hunting for the lines in particular, which is like onlooking philosopher philosophizing big pictures, thinking beyond semantics of rhythmic bums, immediate desire, home runs, and you know, bums can be like dual meaning there, which I enjoyed. It's just funny to picture both for me. It's always so interesting and so many references and images. So I really thought it was an interesting and layered piece.
Thank you, Babbler. All right, Daisy, how about you?
It was interesting. I like how he kind of delves into the different types of people and what may be that mix of like naughty and philosophy and how different people see it as different things. The Ophelia part interests me, and I liked Overdose of Guillotine. Art's vain mirror on reality is an interesting way to sum it up at the end. It's pretty trippy and interesting, and it seems to be Peter's style is that he's a little bit abstract, but there's definitely layers in there.
Absolutely. You're right on the abstract angle with Peter. He loves kind of tickling the mentality, so to speak, because it does give you a lot of imagery and a little bit of humor to boot. I mean, like, save some chestnuts, ugly winter around corner. That's a hell of a thought. And drugs to mainline on Florida vacation, sleep to all hours. Look, Prince Brick. So there's a lot of things that run amok. And I like the thought he threw in here, smiling and grunting limitation, yes of Joyce, Picasso's exaggeration, book signing, Dickensian recitations, fame in the red carpet line. Elaine, he hits on so many thoughts. Dickensian, you look at the ugliness of Victorian London, the backdrop, Picasso's exaggeration, doing the abstract portraits of women, so to speak, and Joyce, his love letters to his girlfriend talking about her farts and wanting to play back tag, so to speak, and then the fame in the red carpet lane, you get into the thought of Hollywood imbecility and spread across all pages. And I did like that nice run he had with the Tarzan and Jane, her sister team, lusting during the monkey scene. That was pretty cool. And Babbler hit on that one thought with the philosophizing. That stanza was definitely hit on that sort of, all right, yeah, maybe you spend too much time in front of the computer. You know what? Start reading. Learn a little bit. Pam, have you crawled back into the room yet? Because it's your turn.
I'm sorry. Yes. Well, you know me. I'm just running around looking at shiny things.
Displaced illusions.
Right. And, oh, my goodness, I got to tell you, Peter is, his writing is something else. I always appreciate that he writes for so many different contests and that he does have a voice and a style all his own. Let's see here. I had read this earlier, so I'm trying to – I didn't hear the whole thing when it was being read, but I had read it earlier, and I'm trying to look at some of the main part that stood out to me. I really like the line, "slap of enlightened men." I also really liked where it mentions the knowing House of the Rising Sun strings to forever tune. You know, it's that kind of that whole idea to me of that prostitution has been around, well, forever and a day, and it'll continue to be around. When all other needs, when the need to philosophize, when the need to whatever our needs are put aside, and then there will be that left. She's got some really great twisted humor in the ending stanzas about Tarzan and Jane. I also like "drug to mainline on Florida vacation, sleep to all hours, look, Prince Prick." I don't know, there's something about this that just really speaks to me on the whole idea of, people in power and what they use their money for. But anyway, it's definitely a layered and thought-provoking write, and sorry, I can't really say a whole lot, but very well done.
Happy getting your freak on after midnight.
There you go.
What was that?
I said I laugh, but I was on mute.
So you had to make sure to unmute yourself just so that Rex could hear you laugh.
I was just muted.
Well, he did make that reference to humans being just like rabbits and monkeys. So, just animals in the flesh.
Exactly, with a whole lot less fur. All right. So, up next is "We Live in a Horror Show" by Darkened Auras. And oh, Babbler, will you give that a read for us, please?
Sure. This is "We Live in a Horror Show" by Darkened Auras. Why be scared of monsters like many in many a horror show when the horrors of reality and human monsters grow? The giant monster animals, crocodiles, insects, a snake, the CGI gives it away that these are merely fake. The man who haunts your dreams, the corpse within the lake, the one who wears a hockey mask, vampires killed by a stake. These are the things that give a rush, ambience filled with jump scares. But there are true terrors all around, with so many completely unawares. People kidnapped, raped, and murdered. It happens every day, they say. Kids beaten, bruised, and broken fall through the cracks each day. We live inside a horror show. Are you the victim or the villain? Some people are infections but can't be cured with penicillin. End poem.
Great read, Babla. Thank you very much. And she took "Welcome to the Worst Nightmare of All, Reality." All right, Casey, you get to kick it first. What do you think?
I really like this. And it's I connect with this because I'm not scared of anything that is, like, supernatural in terms of, like, movies or books. That doesn't freak me out at all. But I am a total wuss if it's something that I think could happen, because the realistic stuff is so much scarier to me. There is too much that is a possibility, and I really connected with this because I, like, can't watch any of those, like, true stories of blah, 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 like, it seems to have taken over Netflix. No, because we do live in the horror show. The realistic stuff is what's terrifying.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, Faisy. Pam?
Yeah, I have to agree with Faisy on it. You know, it's the real stuff that scares the most. The other stuff, you know, as it says in the poem, you know, that other stuff you can dismiss. You know it's pretend, but, you know, you're constantly bombarded with stories, whether it's on Facebook or the news or wherever you get your source from. And even all of us, unfortunately, know people, you know, that horrors like this happen to. And I like that she mentions that the CGI gives it away. I thought that was a great poke at some of the really corny special effects. And then on the more serious end, near the last stanza, where it says, some people are infections but can't be cured with penicillin. You know, and that just really makes you think about how well do programs that, you know, are supposed to change the mindset of an abuser actually work. So it gives food for thought at the end while providing a harsh slap of reality. So very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Babla, we're coming to you, and you got to read it.
You know, I really like this. It makes me think about, you know, something that I've thought for a while and said to a few of my friends, is, you know, humanity's greatest fear is humanity. You know, the things that you see in horror movies aren't things that animals do. They're things that people do, whether it's like aliens coming down and, you know, taking over the earth to make it like their planet or steal our resources. Like, that's something that people would do. Or if it's a horror movie where someone stalks you to murder you, you know, humans evolved by literally stalking prey for hundreds of miles. There's no other animal that does that. You know, the thing that really incites fear in people is other people. You know, we're the creepiest and scariest monsters of them all. And I think that's what this poem too gets at, especially with, you know, the particular horror movie villains that were pointed out, you know, the Jasons and the vampires and the humanesque creatures are really what keeps people up at night. And I think this does a really good job of pointing it out and the actual horrors that exist. So well done.
Oh, I like that thought, Babla. Thank you very much. And you're right. This is kind of it's separated into a two-part piece. You got the first three, which hits on the ease of angle, one thought, and then the second three walks on another angle. But I did that CGI gives it away. It used to be in movies that you could actually they go around with the makeup. They do it in such a manner. It was a little cheesy at times, but it didn't walk that angle. You know, it's totally fake. At least you can see it, kind of touch it, so to speak. And but then you started getting these movies, like you get the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the Friday the 13th, the Halloweens, the Scarfaces, and that all of that kind of inured people, along with the video games, to real violence, which the newspapers don't bother offering up as much as they should, because they're too much into everything else. And everything that you see in the last three stanzas kind of gets lost by the wayside, and people are looking at it when they do is, that never happens here, but they don't realize it does happen just around the corner. Because I remember when that little girl disappeared back in Florida, I lived only a few miles from that little trailer park where she killed off her daughter and stuffed her in a trunk, and took them a couple of months to find the body and the DNA in the trunk of that car. And she's writing that last line. Some people are infections, and they can't be cured with penicillin. The only way to cure that is to make sure they never walk the earth again. Nicely done. All right, Pam, we're coming back your way.
Pam said she had to go for a little bit. She'll be back. She asked me to read, but I actually can't read this next one.
Okay. Okay. I'll do
I'm happy
one.
To read again. I don't care.
Okay, then I'll go ahead and read it. I apologize for that. I'll take care of what I need to after this poem is read.
Well, I can read it.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah, that sounds good. Go for it.
The Flame, a contemporary sonnet by Danet Day. The flames within our souls burn through the night, and yet we fear the darkness even still. We burn so hard but shed so little light, and shiver from the bleak, nocturnal chill. Although the flame is hot, it burns so brief, our light is just a candle in the wind. But time itself becomes a furtive thief, and leaves us only darkness in the end, more and more each day, until the reaper snuffs it with his breath, and everything we are just fades away. Our lives are short, and so we burn so bright, because we fear the fast approach of night. And poem. Nicely done, Dave. Thank you. All right. Babla, why don't you start us on a comment? What do you think?
Oh, I like it. You know, it's not just, you know, we burn bright but cast a little light, you know, sheds a little light, which is the Clive Barker quote. But not only that, but we burn as hard as we do. Because we are afraid of the dark. So if we can burn as brightly as we can and fade out, then we won't have, you know, seen as much of the darkness. It's a really interesting concept, you know, to burn yourself out from fear. So I really liked it. I thought it was an interesting take on the quote.
Absolutely. Thank you, Babla. All right, Daisy, how about you?
It was interesting. It was hard. It's hard for me to comment because I can't actually see what he posts.
Oh, I didn't realize that. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Get me on the next one.
Well, that's all right. Here I go. I'm going to go with Babla. It's a nice. It's a different take on that quote. We burn so hard, but we shed so little light. It makes us crazy and sad. There is that note that. He hits on that, though. A lonely candle stays the hand of death, and yet the wax melts more and more each day. There is that thought of we know our lives are short. We spend too much time worrying about death instead of living. So maybe the thought within that spending so much time thinking about death, we don't shed that light. We shed a little darkness in those moments, and therefore we don't live as we should. And the thought with the bleak nocturnal chill and the darkness comes from that those times deep in our history when nighttime meant horror because we did live in the darkness. We didn't have the fire, at least not in the beginning, and it took a while to get even that far down the line. So that little tidbit of fear still lingers in the backside of our brains. And I do like the thought in the last two lines, our lives are short and so we burn so bright because we fear the fast approach of life. There's kind of that notation. It almost looks upon those the 27 Club, so to speak. You live fast, you die young, and you leave a good corpse to look at. And Pam, are you back yet? Or do we keep mumbling?
I am. Yes. Yes, I am. And I thought this was a beautifully written sonnet. Great take on the prompt. A lonely candle stays the hand of death, and yet the wax melts more and more each day. I like that. And I'm sure somebody already mentioned this, but I didn't hear anything anybody was saying. But I liked how that signifies the way that they used to measure time by how like far down the candle had gone. So I thought that was really cool. And you know, I like the mention of the candle in the wind as, you know, like a to that song Candle in the Wind by Elton John was really cool. And Bleak Nocturnal Chill was altogether just a really excellent phrase, because it doesn't make you think about nighttime only. It makes you think about the kind of nighttime that seems to drag on forever because you're just lonely and sad, and just an excellent write and very well done.
Absolutely. I wanted to mention that Candle in the Wind book, because he did marry that with putting up that quote as separate lines to run in the piece as well. All right. Where would you like to go now?
All right. So I think that we will go ahead and go to... And all right. Let's go with The Insult by... Oh, wait, we don't have permission from him. Shit, I am not on my A game today, am I? All right.
You got to lay off the shiny objects and the whiskey.
It's... Oh, my gosh. You know what it is? I just... Horrible.
Are you playing quarter bounce with shot glass and hot cinnamon whiskey?
Oh, I wish. I wish. No, it's sinuses. But... All right, let me take that one off. I would much rather be playing with cinnamon whiskey. Although, you know what I discovered was really good is black cherry whiskey with orange juice.
Oh, that sounds positively nasty.
You know what? Nobody's sitting on your lap making you drink it, mister, so.
I'm not good. Good with flavor.
He might prefer it if they were.
Right.
Good whiskey should be favored for the flavor.
Well,
yeah,
anyway,
and bourbon with black cherry flavor. That sounds like a horrible soda.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I like plain whiskey. I drink it all the time. But I also like to experiment with flavors. I'm trying to think if there's a flavor I've ever met that I didn't
and you
like.
Enjoyed yoga, you enjoyed yoga, Meister, in the day, didn't you?
I did, yes. Until I got violent.
That's like drinking NyQuil.
It tasted like black licorice, not NyQuil.
Oh.
You know, black licorice flavored NyQuil is not a bad idea. You know, it shares that
actually,
little bit of acidic flavor.
At least you wouldn't have that foul taste left in your mouth from original NyQuil. I could do
exactly.
The black licorice.
I think the black licorice could mask some NyQuil pretty nicely.
I think so. I think so. You have
Zambuca to sit alongside the cabinet with the NyQuil.
All right. Now, finally, I have something that Aphasiana can read, and that is Pornographic Fantasy by Betty Page.
Oh, you finally found someone who hasn't blocked me? It's a miracle. Okay. Pornographic Fantasy by Betty Page. So pornographic, vivid images define true reality, abundantly free, loves each other's own fantasy, philosophy's brand, rainbow stickers, sweet, curious all the way, kiss, divinely sublime, secretly desire, fantasy, just now has turned fine reality. Discreetly, sweetie, what is your philosophy? Sticker represents. Pornographic style, label, peel off, add one more, so now what's the score? Melodically, craving deep, lustfully high, luxurious sigh. Kitty collar sweet, licks you all up slowly, nice, circling so swiftly. Tangling with you softly, gently, passionate, lusciously fine. End poem.
Great read, Daisy. You sounded as though you enjoyed that one.
I did.
Pam, you get to kick it. What do you think of Betty and her fantasy, the pornographic style?
I know. I gotta say that for something that's pornographic, it it doesn't remind me of the porn that I used to watch back in the 90s. It's like so much more
slow. It's missing the pubic hair and soundtrack.
Right? Oh my gosh, I remember.
Oh god. A little Flesh Gordon. Here comes the Penisaurus.
Before I comment on Betty's poem, I have to share this. This is the most memorable scene I've ever seen, and I won't describe it in vivid detail. But so this girl, instead of spitting or swallowing, was blowing bubbles. Like she got into her cardiac. She was blowing bubbles with it, and the guy was in front of her going, bubbly, 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 bubbles. Like,
oh. Well, I understand why it's memorable.
Oh, my gosh. To this day, I watched that with one of my best friends, and to this day, when we talk to each other, we can't help going bubbly, bubbly. But anyways, back to Betty.
Yeah.
Okay, anyways, this is just wonderfully classic Betty. This is the kind of prompt that she is made for. But, you know, the thing is I like how beautifully sensual this is. But, you know, it's not just the sexuality which is in here, which is straight, right in your face, but there's almost a kind of like you can tell these are two people are really connected with that luxurious sigh, like their full attention is on each other. I really like, and you know, and then she has stuff in here that you wouldn't even think to put in a sensual, right? Like rainbow stickers, sweet, like. I don't know, that makes me think of the whole idea that somebody just did such a great job that you give them a sticker because, well, you know, what the heck, they did a good job. I thought that was really cool. And let's see, melodically craving deep, lustful, high, luxurious sigh, kitty collar, sweet, licks you all up, slowly, nice, circling so swiftly. Those are just delicious lines. And, you know, I think the thing that I like best about this right is the fact that she doesn't hold back. She says what she enjoys, and you have no doubt that this is a woman who doesn't hide that she has a sexual appetite, as I don't think any woman should. So, excellent right and very well done.
Thank you very much. And those definitely were the lines that reminded you of your bubbly bubbly, didn't they? Kitty Collins.
Yes.
All right, Babla, your turn. What did you think?
I enjoyed it. I mean, you know, it talks about sexuality, and it's clearly, you know, a sexual situation. But there's definitely some playful in here. And I think it's prefaced by the little stanza that says, abundantly free, loves each their own fantasy, philosophy's brand. And so this is kind of like, well, this is this particular scenario of what, you know, a person could be into is, you know, stickers and kitty cats and like cutesy style sexual encounters, which aren't that common. So it is kind of like a weird, you know, like fetish scenario, but there's a weird sweetness to it. And my word weird here sounds weird because I don't mean that in like a derogatory way, but I just mean like different or unusual. I'm like, that's not really the right word for that. But and it's not the typical direction you'd expect something to go, which, you know, it's not what's going to come to mind for most people when you hear the word pornographic fantasy. And I think that's kind of the point. You know, in a sexual fantasy and in the right environment, you're free to explore whatever you want to, regardless of how unusual it is, you know, in the right scenario and, you know, given that it's legal. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a great take and an interesting direction to go.
Absolutely. Thank you, Babla. And Facey, how about you?
I liked it. You know, the way that she words things is fun to read, like to read out loud. I really enjoy being the one to read hers. And it has kind of like a Lolita kind of feel to it. I'm picturing like the kind of the frilly, girly dresses and that kind of like cutesiness. It's interesting the way that she does it. And there's a whimsy to this write that I enjoyed.
Ah, Lolita and whimsy. I like that. And Babel, you're right on offering up this as pornographic fantasy when it's a step down from that, actually. But it does, it's the kind of sort of what one offers up as pornographic, somebody else offers philosophy, as she kind of hits on that abundantly free love, each their own fantasy, philosophy, brand, and rainbow sticker suite. And she does hit on a couple other things, like the kitty collar suite. So this is kind of not as a singularity. It's an encompassment of everybody and where they lie. So it's a matter of whose taste and what they secretly desire, so to speak, as she well puts in this. And I got a kick out of that. I thought what the sticker represents, so there's offering up that notion how people get pigeonholed, so to speak, into this or that arena just because they think a little differently from someone else. All right, Pam, we're coming back to you.
All right. You know, I have to say, I think Faviana is so much deeper of a thinker than I am at times. And I like what you had to say, though, there in the room, Faviana, about, you know, not being determined by interest or gender or whatever. Oh, very cool. All right. Well, since I see Frank hanging out in the room giving us support, or I did not too long ago, I have up his poem, Words Are Sexier Than Flesh by Poetic Picasso. And Rex, will you do that a read for us, please?
Oh, I see. Words Are Sexier Than Flesh by Poetic Picasso. Señorita, there is something sexy about reading the lips of a beautiful woman and hearing her whisper words of passion into my ears, so softly and so sensually, resonating delightfully at night when my carnal flesh is lit upon a blazing fuego with her poetic tongue. I could tangle with her in electric kisses and swirl into a tantric state of rapture as I listen to the echo of her desires and enter into the realm of pleasures with just the utterance of her exotic seduction. As her erotic words invite me to discover the world of wicked secrets and taboos, I ride the winds of her lovemaking with only my mind of exploration until I reach the rising surf of the high tides into the ocean of honey with her irresistible eyes as our lips join with the notes of lustful harmonies from the sultry strings of a flamenco guitar. I could listen to her crescendo of Spanish words and be bewitched by her steaming gypsy spell until the stars go away before the brink of dawn, as long as I can hear her speak her arousing words of temptation and delicious flirtation. Tus palabras me seducen y tu boca me satisface con la pasión que arde por todo mi cuerpo, mi amor. All right, Daisy, why don't we start with you? What do you think of Frank's piece here?
I love it. I really think it's incredible. It's so eloquent and, beautifully worded. And I really like the theme as well, that words are sexier than flesh, and the way that he explores that. I could listen to her crescendo of Spanish words and bewitched her steaming gypsy spell until the stars go away before the brink of dawn. I just really enjoy this. It's sensual, but in like a classy way.
Absolutely. Thank you, Faisy. And Pam, how about you?
Well, first of all, that was an excellent read there, Rex. That was perfect for your voice. Let's see. Yeah, I have to agree that this is tastefully done. I'm a fan of lines that, like not lines, well lines, yeah, phrases that tiptoe close to the line but never cross it. Like, I ride the winds of her, I thought was a beautifully seductive line that puts imagery into your mind, but it is gentle to the eyes. And I also like, I would listen to her crescendo Spanish words and be bewitched by her steaming gypsy spell until the stars go away before the brink of dawn, as long as I can hear her speak her rousing words. You know, the whole idea of, you know, I mean, and because voices are particularly arousing when somebody's got that right tone. And Spanish, French, those kind of languages, you know, are just so beautiful and seductive. Like, you know, I have yet to find a man who will let me speak dirty to him in German. Yeah, but, you know, I just...
German
I
for
keep
general.
Like extra on the dirty.
I always say that, you know, being sexy in German is like a Klingon mating ritual. Like,
that sounds about right.
I think it could work if you're a dom. You know, you got to do it for the Black Lace Diaries show that Victoria does.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
That actually might work, and Victoria get a kick out of that.
I bet she probably actually would. But as always, you know, the use of music in here, and I really like the words delicious flirtation, because I think the flirtations are such an important part of connecting. So just top-notch right and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Babla, how about you?
I really liked it. It was beautiful and sensual and smooth, and you could almost hear, like, the Spanish music playing in the back, like the guitar. I really loved the lines, I reached the rising surf of high tides into the ocean of honey with your irresistible eyes as our lips join with the notes of lustful harmonies from the sultry strings of a flamenco guitar. Just, you know, the going from the honey and you know, the waves, and it's just beautiful imagery and sound at the same time. I just thought this was very sultry and romantic and musical. There's a lot of auditory sensory experience in here.
Absolutely. Thank you, Babla. This is intricate, it's delicate, it's sweet, it's delicious. And when he got to that thought right down here with, as long as I can hear her speak her rousing words of temptation and delicious flirtation. And I got that image of an old TV comedy show, The Addams Family, where Morticia Fisher opens up a little bit of French and Gomez goes a little bit nuts all up and down her arm. Kish, you spoke French. You know what that does to me. And that kind of epitomizes everything you've gotten here with the little wicked secrets and taboos. I ride the winds for lovemaking, irresistible eyes, sultry strings. And tell you the truth, I wasn't sure I was going to make it properly on that. Didn't do too badly. Thank you, Frank.
You did great at that. Yep, your Spanish there was muy caliente, or however they say it. All right. Well, up next is Raise a Blaze by Julie Buck. Now, is everybody still here?
No, we left.
Yep.
That last one is all
put out.
At least I have some friends that aren't smart ass.
Who?
Nice touch. I like that.
All right. Up next, Raise a Blaze by Julie Buck. And it goes like this. He does mind blue. He'd been blue all his life. In the mansion on the cliff, his bled blood for home, no job, no offspring, no wife, entitlement with nowhere to roam. But he stands firm with his hands in his jean pockets, and his thoughts mocking him further demean the clouds from a spooky, smoky circle like an ancient ritual, asking him to fly on in. But beware, for your own sake, do not appease your fate with irredeemable guarantees. The blue he does mind. All his life he's been blue. He's just angry. Where has he been all this time to have never known? Stop burning out and fixate on an ember dim. Now he knows what to do and what he must own to raise a blaze fierce from a whim. I foolishly put all my light into one basket slightly worn, believing faith, redeemable, once a soul reborn. Start living, stop banking on promises cut from deceit. After all, I did purchase one life and still have the receipt. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Stacey, why don't we start with you? What do you think?
I enjoyed that. I think she brings this character to life and gives him, us a little bit of history and his attitude and that kind of hopeless feeling of not having any of those things that, that he hoped for. I really liked when he says, I put all my light in one basket. It was sort of like the don't put all your eggs in one basket kind of saying, but that idea of like putting all of your hopes in one place, and the fact that it was light, it was like all those bright, happy moments got put into one little box that, that didn't work out. I thought that that was a really nice way of explaining that.
All right, good said, Daisy. Thank you. And Babla, how about you?
I enjoyed it, you know. At first, I wasn't quite sure where it was going because, you know, the benchmarks of success here are like marriage and family, and that's not necessarily true for everyone. And then it, to me, it seemed to change and kind of imply that, you know, happiness isn't banked all in one thing no matter what that is. You know, you kind of need a mix of everything to have a well-rounded and enjoyable life. And he had just unilaterally decided, you know, career and not dedicated anything else. And so I think it's a good message, and it's a little more nuanced than it appears to be at first. And I think it's well done. And I think the last lines are particularly effective. So yeah, I think it's a great piece.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Babla. All right, Pam, you got to read it.
Yeah, as always, just wonderful right from Julie. I always like how she separates her lines to where sometimes she'll have just a single line in a stanza as if to emphasize it. And I like how she instantly brings us into this character, into the idea of, he doesn't mind being blue because that's what he's been all his life. You know, he's always made his whole life about work, about that pension, no wife, no kids. And he's never thought about life being any different. And now all of a sudden it comes to that turning point, that crossroad where it's like, well, it's coming near the end. And maybe, you know, it can't be different. You can't go back in time, but you can move forward with a different mindset. And I really liked what Babbler had to say about how it doesn't really matter what that one thing is. And even Faziana said that, the idea of putting all your eggs in one basket. When you have your happiness, your entire happiness leaning on one thing, one concept, one person, that's too much. You're putting all that pressure onto and expectations to where it can't be held up. And I like that there's that, again, that moment of realization where this character realizes that they did purchase this life, with the time and the energy that they put into it. You know, they have been given this life, and they're still, like, that opportunity to just relish it. And so an excellent write and very well done.
Great comments, guys. Now it's my turn to walk off the cliff. Yeah. All right. Just from that opening up, there's a couple of lines here that really struck me. No job, no offspring, no wife, just entitlement with nowhere to roam. And that sort of a mansion on the cliff is for home. I had me kind of thinking, and Pam, you just hit on a second ago, the crossroads, meeting a crossroads demon and actually angling up to the thought of promising your soul for everything that you wanted. And there's that thought that rolls through there. But to me, this kind of walks on another thought. This is a Lucifer Morningstar coming to terms with who and what he is. Originally, he put all his eggs in one basket as the right hand of God, so to speak, and he got reborn as a hell-bound soul. So I think that last few lines hit it on the right. Start living, start banking on promises cut from deceit. After all, I did purchase one life and still had the receipt. There's that noted pleasure in the thought of, where was that, to raise a blaze fierce from a whim. Time to light the fire and get this game show going. All right, Pam, back up to you.
Well said there, Rex. And up next is Truth is a Blind Man by John Diamond. And Babbler, would you give that a read for us, please?
Absolutely. Truth is a Blind Mailman by John Diamond. He preached a pious excrement like any other politician. Her smut seemed poetic until she took her knickers off. Her light burned all night, but her heart was always dark. His evil odiousness soon ran out of gas, but never his bowels. Nothing is sacred if dog poop and daffodils are not. There is more sexuality in one word than in 10 brothels. His reality was a bad dream, and we all lived in his mind. Seraphic activists will hunt you down with a righteous frown. If you are a jerk, then the Order of Holy Men, it is your sacred calling. Dorothea, put that sacrificial knife down. I am always alone in a crowd, fortunately. End of poem.
Great read, Babla. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, you get to kick this one first.
Awesome. I like kicking. All right. So I have to say, I really like John Diamond's poetry. He's been showing up more on in our contest for late night poet shows, and I really appreciate that. What I like is he pulled a Rex here. He was prompted by all 10 of the quotes. And it seems almost as if he just gave like a line to each quote. But what a really wonderful, thought-provoking way to do it. And the neat thing is that it doesn't come across as jagged. Like, it doesn't come across as if it was just a bunch of separate poems slammed together, but rather flows nicely. Let's see, though. I mean, it's great all the way through, but I really like Nothing is Sacred if Dog Poop and Daffodils Are Not. There's some wonderful humor to that, and it's from one extent to the other. You know, you have the dog poop, which is the end of the cycle, and the daffodils representing the beginning of a cycle. There is more sexuality in one word than in 10 brothels. I would have to say that probably depends on the word. You know, lima beans, not particularly sexual, but, you know, each to their own.
Hot.
And there.
But that's two words.
Seraphic activists will hunt you down with a righteous frown if you are a jerk. And you know what? That to me really speaks volumes about hypocrisy within religions, and also the whole idea that everybody points fingers at everyone's sins except for their own, and people are very selective about what they decide to judge and what they decide to let pass, when really they just need to be minding their own damn business. But just an excellent thought-provoking write, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Stacey, how about you?
Well, I think that we need to challenge ourselves to make Lima Bean sexy. But I had the same favorite line as Pam: nothing is sacred if dog poop and daffodils are not. And I really loved there is more sexuality in one word than in 10 brothels. So, yeah, she pointed out the part that really stuck out to me. Those are such creative lines. This was a really creative write with some cool vocabulary, and it made me laugh the whole time, but it also made me think. So I think I have to start following John Diamond because I really enjoyed this.
Excellent. Thank you, Faisy. Babla, you got to read it. How about you?
I enjoyed this quite a bit. You know, it was a series of statements, but they all had kind of similar things to say. You know, that we were all about, negative things and pointing out hypocrisies. I really liked the last line, I am always alone in a crowd, fortunately. You know, I don't want to know what everyone else is thinking, and I don't want them to know what I'm thinking. Like, I'm perfectly fine not being connected with the vast majority of the world. You know, my husband always tells me I hate everybody except I like you, and that's about it. So, you know, it just kind of made me think about that. But, you know, it's the hypocrisy that so many people take part in, and with a list of examples, particularly poking at sex and religion and politicians, and how it's just, you know, he's happy to be alone if that's who he's surrounded with. So I thought it was a great piece.
Well said, Babla. Thank you very much. I'm impressed they took on all 10 quotes, and he put it together in a brief few lines, like 12 all told. But Babs hit on that sort of hypocrisy. And he lays it out well, because he hits on the notes of turning each and every line back in on itself. Her smut seemed poetic until she took her knickers off. Ooh, that must have been one hell of a view. Her light burned all night, but her heart was always dark. So everything comes right back in on itself. And the thought of a nothing is sacred if dog poop and daffodils are not. Well, there is a truth to that. And just like he preached a pious excrement like any other politician. This line was designed very carefully with a distinct thought in mind that turns the end of the piece back into the front and on itself, which was really cleverly done. I enjoy that. All right, Pam, we're back to you.
To what Babbler said, I always say that if people could read my mind, I'd have a hell of a lot less friends, and I don't even have that many to begin with, so I'm just very thankful that nobody can.
Well,
and
once they chip your brain, you'll know everybody's going, because you'll all be in tune, hive-minded.
Okay.
I promise you to be really not very rich.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so up next is Welcome to My Nightmare by Wayne Gent. And Afasiana, would you give that a read for us, please?
Welcome to My Nightmare by Wayne Gent. Not safe to go outside. There's nowhere to hide. Don't go out to eat. Shouldn't dare to meet. Never would have known if racism wasn't shown. What was done wasn't right. Hate me 'cause I'm white? To scare to stop just because it's a cop, had no right to kill, it's not right to steal. Invaded the hill, was it the people's will? Did they know how to count? Watch the evidence mount. want to give me a shout with nothing I got without knowing result seems like a cult. If I'm not ill, must get it still against my free will. This can't be real. There is no order, too many crossing border, keep getting the blues, nothing but fake news. No need to ask, must wear a mask, kids not in school, they think I'm a fool. The longer we wait, may become too late, can't stop the hate, was our country, was great. Watch so many die, don't ask me why, I can no longer cry, ready to say goodbye. End poem.
Great rephrasing. Thank you very much. All right, Dan, that's one hell of a picture. Pablo, how about you? What do you think?
I like this piece. He just points out, you know, a lot of the things that have been going on recently in the world and how it's basically his nightmare. I also appreciate that in the author's notes there, he wrote, don't go getting crazy, it's just a poem. you know, because there are definitely some controversial issues that he put in here, you know, and some of his takes are the way I see it, and some of his takes are the way I don't see it, and that's the beauty of each of us getting our own opinions, you know, but it's been a crazy world, and especially the last year has just been a wild ride, you know, so I think this was a fun and almost kind of lighthearted feeling with the short stanzas and the tight rhyme scheme. Almost gives it a bit of playfulness, despite the fact that it's, you know, all pretty heavy material covering. So I thought this was an interesting piece.
That's a great point with the lightheartedness. Unfortunately, that's not how things go these days. So lightheartedness is a great way to approach something. Viewpointed-wise like this, and you're right, everybody's got different points of view on how things are, and it should be shared no matter what. Pam, how about you?
Well, first, oh my goodness, look at that picture of me waking up on the wrong side of the bed. There is something about rhyme that does kind of lighten a write. And I think when you're talking about such important social issues as, you know, the way the world has been for this past, like, well, over a year now, it's important because, you know, it's like adding taking the medicine with that teaspoon of sugar. It's gonna make a difference. People are going to pay attention to what you have to say if you're entertaining them rather than lecturing them. I thought this was a clever write. And the other thing I appreciate about this write is I feel like Wayne has a bit stepped out of his comfort zone because he's oftentimes giving us, I don't know if lighthearted is the right term, I feel like this is a bit different than he usually writes. And I like that, and I appreciate that.
Thank you, Pam. And Stacey, you got to read it. How about you?
Well, I like what Pam said about it having a bit of a lightheartedness in the delivery of it, despite the serious subject matter. Because, like, I don't agree with some of the stuff he said, but it was delivered in a way that was, lighter and more conversational in almost a fun way rather than like an angry, like argument kind of way that some people write in. And I think that made it palatable, even though I disagreed with some things. I feel like his delivery was smart in this.
Absolutely. Thank you, Faze. And you're right. The conversational tone is what's missing these days. Everybody wants to bite each other's heads off, so nothing gets ever talked about. It just gets kind of suppressed or denied or, all right, that's not real. Nothing to see here. All right, Pam, we're coming back your way. All right. Hang on a second. What my girlfriend?
She says, Rex, please read Doc Frank.
No. Damn. I was going to go get something.
Rex, it's on the board for you. She
yeah.
says, please read. Yeah.
Yeah, I had to read Rex back, Stacey.
You make me seem a lot more polite than I actually am, because I'm pretty sure I just said Rex Reed.
Okay, you're right. I added polite.
Damn.
But anyway, okay. I'll be back.
Bye, Boxer.
Thank you, Fabiana.
Gluttony is an evil in a world of hunger, homelessness, but taken to an extreme, it can burst your organs and kill you. And boom. Since you're there, Pam, you get to comment first on what you call this, what was that, something tidbit?
I don't think she's here. She said I'll be back.
Yeah, do that again.
I think she told him a snack.
Well, I think you came up with the thought first, Stacey. Something tidbit? Brevity
snack.
Tidbit?
The bite-sized snacks.
Snack, that's
yes.
right.
mm-hmm. Yes, this is a bite-sized snack. All right, Stacey, what do you think of Dr. Frank's bite-sized?
I think it's a bit ironic that our term is about food when it's like saying like gluttony is evil, and we're like, I'm going to have a snack with this poem.
snack seems inappropriate here.
I know. The snack suddenly makes me feel like I shouldn't be using that word. It's
glutton for poetry?
Yes. You know, I am a glutton for poetry. I tend to prefer the longer ones, but this is a nice snack.
And you go right back to the bite-sized snack. I like that, baby. Thank you. All right, Barbara, how about you?
I really like this, you know. I do find it a little bit funny. You know, like, gluttony is an evil in a world of hunger and homelessness. But taken to an extreme, it can burst your organs and kill you. Like, it's just so, like, violent, you know, and neither one is positive. You know, when he says but, I expect it to twist, you know, to make how gluttony can be a good thing, but it's really not. Like, it's bad or it's really bad, which I found interesting, you know, either way, not a good thing. And I just like the sudden violence of it. Like, it just gets really extreme, you know. So it is short but punchy.
Yes, it is. And I do like that thought in the snack-sized poetry that you guys came up with. It does fit in the fact that it was heavy on the irony that I'm trying to think of that word, and you know it. And here we are. Gluttony is the obvious thought on the page we're talking about food. But I like it on that level where it hits on gluttony as that thought for food. But there is another thought that can work with this, gluttony for not just for the food angle, because it hits on the world of hunger and homelessness, but the extreme is the gluttony being fed so much information that the other organs that can burst are the mind, blood vessels, heart. So this works on another separate little angle as well, which I like. Pam, have you decided to come back into the room yet?
No.
Oh, she pulled the Schwarzenegger. I'll be back.
I am back, and I like what you had to say, Rex. Excellent comment. And I appreciate Doc Frank writing for the show. I thought that was very nice. And all right, and then we'll go ahead and move on to the next poem, which is Reflux Recompense. Okay, what am I doing wrong with that word? Recompense. How do you pronounce that word?
Recompense.
Recompense, okay. Reflux Recompense by Neutron Bomb. And it goes like this. My finger is on the pulse of society, obsidian portals peeping through glazed eyelids that take their last breaths. Fractals of thought line the newspaper, clockwork oranges peeled to reveal decaying, festering flesh. Another day, another massacre. Chunder stains my top. The pungency wilts like an acid burn. Crowds are irksome, chests pounding to the beat of consumerism. I prefer my packages served cold to the front door, masked, asphyxiated face playing mime with the delivery driver. Like an onion, I peel the layers back with a plastic fork, anything to stop despondency. Salt lines my eyelashes and drip saline and welts across my cheek. I mourn the collective future. Don a black veil with rose-tinted glasses to shear the tar from my lens. Cataracts and floaters removed. Blind man Freddy could see we are doomed to debris. End poem.
Great read, Pam. A new song took the quote, being with people makes me vomit. I don't like them. I never did. And Babbler, why don't you kick us off? What do you think?
I really like this. You know, it's gross in a good way. You know, what you would expect from something with a title like Reflux, Recompense. You know, I read, you know, just, I really like the line, clockwork oranges peeled to reveal decaying, festering flesh. Because that is what you would expect to find in a clockwork orange if you peeled it. You know, obviously not an actual clockwork, but in reference to the film. I would expect to find a clock in the other orange. But the use of the word chunder, which is New Zealand or Australian slang for vomit. You know, I just think that word is an interesting choice because it gives it a place. You know, but just sitting there in the morning and reading the newspaper about the ongoing massacres and brutality and nastiness that is human in the world right now, and just getting the packages served cold to the front door to avoid people altogether, you know, and just the crying and just trying to put it all out. I think it's a really depressing and bleak photo. Photo poem, but also does really well with the prompt, I think. It's dark and gritty, as many of her poems are, but I think it's a really well-stated message and idea to get across.
Man, great comment, Babbler. Now, I've got nothing left to say because you took all my words, but thank you. Baby, how about you?
I really related to the part that says crowds are irksome, chest pounding to the beat of consumerism. I prefer my packages served cold to the front door. I tend to have panic attacks when I'm in crowds, so the chest pounding to the beat of consumerism just felt right, especially like when you can hear the beeps at the checkout line. I feel like my pulse like matches that. So I think she might share my anxiety a little bit there. And I actually do kind of like avoiding having to deal with the deliveries right now. You just kind of like leave it on the front step away from the window. I'm kind of antisocial in general, and right now I'm quite agoraphobic, so I feel this.
Excellent. Thank you, Faze. Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I really like this. It's got that raw, gritty language. It's, as Afasiana said, it's relatable. It's so easy to just feel overwhelmed, and especially if you're dealing with somebody new. Like if I go to my bank and I want to cash a check or something, they ask me no questions. I've been going to the same bank for like 15 years, but if they're training in somebody new and they start to ask me questions, I just freeze up. And but I really like the imagery in this use, like salt lines my eyelashes, and the pungency welts like an acid burn. I thought was very visceral imagery. But I especially like don a black veil with rose tinted glasses, and that I thought was great because it's that whole idea of, you know, that you're preparing for the worst but hoping for the best. So. Just an excellent write and very well done.
Absolutely. Thank you, Pam. Yeah, I found this dark and bleak. reflection of what's going on, and starts it off quite well. My fingers on the pulse of society, obsidian portals peeping through glazed eyelids. They take their last breaths. So there's a nice touch of darkness in there. And Babbler hit on that thought with the clockwork oranges. And that was a great line, too. It kind of there's that reflection from Clockwork Orange, the movie. And I thought Chunda, too, was a nice word offered up in there, especially because you drop in the pungency. Well, it's like an acid burn to follow that. And I did, too. I like those last two stanzas, especially the one before that, the I mourn the collective future. Dawn of black veil with rose-tinted glass to shear the tar from my lens. Cataracts and floaters removed. Blind man Freddy could see we are doomed to debris. So there's that offering that even a blind man can see what is actually going on. A whole lot of hard things are going. And what is going on? All right, Cam. Where would you like to go?
All right. Well,
besides
first of all,
back to your cinnamon whiskey.
Hold on, give me just a moment. I got booted off my screen, so I have to get back there. Who's leaving us?
Daisy's going out to rob someplace.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, tell her she has to wait for me.
I'm not robbing them. I just look like I am. Like Pam was talking about, like, when she looks when she gets nervous at the bank. Oh, my God, they start asking me questions, and I'm, like, sweating like crazy, and I'm shaking. It's like, so I'm sure I look like I'm so suspicious. I'm just, like, terrified they're going to look at my account and be like, she's poor.
Oh, hell. Daisy, that's too funny.
I don't know. Well, Rex, could you go ahead and grab Casey Day's poem and then Babbler give it a read? I have
sure.
to say, Fabian, I suddenly had this thought in my head. Could you imagine the two of us, two women who don't drive because of health reasons, actually trying to rob a bank? I mean, considering the fact that we both don't drive and we both do horribly in public.
We would be the worst criminal team ever.
That kind of sounds like a Keystone Cops routine. Or a Three Stooges little play. Yo, Mo.
Yep, that would be us, the Two Stooges.
Okay, I got it up. Oh, and Babs hit me up too. Thank you, Babs.
I just figured
you can pick either one now. They're both on the board.
All right, so this is The Smolder by Casey Day. Door slams, glass breaks, ripped shirt, walls shake, hot kiss, rough hands, make love, hair pull, light choke, explode, cigarette smoke, and boom.
Great read, Babla. Thank you very much. And all right, Pam, are you here or am I missing something?
I am here, and I have to say, though I'm not looking at the poem, I had read it earlier, I think she got all the right words. Especially the light choke. I mean, I like the way she just captures with, like, one to three words per line the whole idea of that sex that is violent and passionate, with breaking glass and slamming each other up against the walls and the choking and the kind of kissing that bruises your lips and your hips. You know, I just think it's a wonderful, passionate write about how words can be used to convey sensuality, and very well done.
Great thoughts there, Pam. you can hear it. She put a SoundCloud in her AN, but it came in a little bit too late to make the show, unfortunately. I'm sorry, Casey, but I have listened to SoundCloud. You all should, too. She does this. She kind of likes a little bit of emphasis in a couple of points that you'll thoroughly enjoy. And Casey, how about you? What do you think?
I like it. I think that the short lines do work really well for this, where we're focusing on the power of words. I liked Ripped Skirt and Rough Hands and Explode the best. Those were my favorite lines.
Thank you, Faisy. And Babla, you got three. How about you?
I mean, I liked it. You know, a whole encounter in such a short poem. I also love the rhythm of this. It's two syllables, you know, until you get to cigarette smoke. Ripped skirt could be an exception, but I think most people say ripped, you know, not, they don't really make it two syllables. So, you know, it's really just two syllables, but a whole down, which gives it like a bump, 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 bump feel, which I think really helps the imagery. It's like really punctuated, and you can almost feel like the slamming and the you know, violence of it. So I think it went really well, and the fact that cigarette smoke is more than that is, you know, the release, and the, you know, it becomes more languid. So I really liked it. I think it was very well executed.
Actually, you're very correct that she does use the two syllable theme throughout, so that you get that impression of the duality running all the way through, and then the cigarette smoke at the end offers up that thought. In four, so both ends are working, the two on two, so to speak. And they only use 23 words to make this work, and she does a nice progressive slant all the way down the page, so each next line has that much more depth of impact to follow into the next one. You know, the glass breaks, the picture of the mirror shattering on the wall, the skirt's ripped off, then the walls shake, and the reverberation from the glass being broken, falling down, then that hot kiss, the cold touch, the little hands less than warmer than the body itself. So nice touch than the rough hands. She played that very nicely. Thank you, Casey. All right, Pam. Oh, never mind. Are you back in online, or do I got to go get something else?
You have to grab something just right after Neutron. There's two poems. Grab one of them and have a Faisy on it.
Okay. Neutron. Ah, yes. Ah, okay. Here you go, Faisy. I've got you. Dark Fire by Jess D. Coming your way now.
Dark Fire by Jess D. Like a black flame in the frigid embrace of an ice-crusted night, I burn. Medusan tendrils of dark fire writhe around my poisoned head, snapping acid-sharp teeth, dripping with PTSD-cut venom. To your filtered eyes, my inky fire sparkles, reeling you in, hooked by the lie. Wander too close, and I'll bite you, deep and often. The light you see in me, I don't, but the fire burns hot and dark under the surface, like molten onyx seeping into your pores, slowly burning you from the inside out, cauterizing all sense of self-preservation. A glimpse of light flashes, reflecting off moist eyes, a smile missing so long. Maybe dark fire has met its match. End poem.
Great read, Faisy. Thank you very much. And she took We Burn So Hard, But We Shed So Little Light. It makes us crazy and sad. Babla, what do you think of this?
I really, you know, this was really interesting to me, you know, because it's a dark fire, but it's like a dark fire of depression or self-hatred or wounds, you know. I was really drawn to the line, slowly burning you from the inside out, cauterizing all sense of preservation. You know, it's the idea of that being numbed by this dark burning
affliction. And then the idea at the end where a glimpse of light flashes, reflecting off moist eyes, a smile missing so long, maybe dark fire has met its match. A match like as to ignite the fire maybe into light, but also, you know, finding the right pairing to make it, you know, a brighter and happier life. So I really liked this. I thought it was interesting and complex, and I really liked some of the imagery in here.
Oh, I like that, Barbara. Thank you very much. Pam, can you give something?
Could you and Aphasiana and you comment first?
All right. Faisy, you got to read this little tidbit. What do you think?
I really, really loved it. I don't know. I connected with this one. I love the Medusa imagery. it's my kind of, I was going to say crazy, but I want to call her crazy. eccentric, perhaps, and dark. I really liked it. The Medusa imagery, especially the snapping acid, sharp teeth dripping with PTSD cut venom, the idea of like those tendrils of your past that kind of turn you into a monster, and I really liked the way that it describes the burningness underneath the surface, where especially it says cauterizing all sense of self-preservation. It's like it burns out that part of you that where you protect yourself and you just give in to temptation. I thought this was incredible and interesting in the way that it was put together.
You're absolutely right. This was that opening stanza itself was really done well. I like that thought with, I burn, Medusa tendrils of dark fire writhe around my poison head, snapping acid sharp teeth, dripping with PTS cut venom. But she gives you a little glimpse right there with the PTSD cut venom as what's going on. So you got a little bit of imagery and imagination to bite your own tongue on, find out what's going on. And then you hit on that second one, hooked by the lie, one too close, not bite you deep and often. Now, that third stanza was really kind of intense. The light you see in me, I don't. But the fire burns hot and dark under the surface, like molten onyx seeping into your pores, slowly burning you from the inside out, cauterizing all sense of self-preservation. That's another. I love that thought with molten onyx seeping into your pores. That's pretty cool. And as Barbara pointed out, the end has its own thought, that little touch of a smile missing so long. Maybe dark fire has meant it's matched to me, but there's that catch-up of finally coming to terms with the PTSD or coming to terms with what happened to the point where you see a light at the end of the tunnel, that dark tunnel. All right, Pam, your turn now. Bye.
All right, what's that?
You gotta stop beating on that machine. Otherwise.
Oh, I know, right? I have to stop loading up so much porn on it. That's the problem. I'm kidding.
Okay. The porn gremlins are running the machine now.
Oh, my gosh. I tell you, I have more than two tabs open, and it eventually crashes before the end of a show. But, I have to say, first of all, it's really good to see Jess. I haven't seen her write of hers in a contest for a while. I was thinking about her yesterday and how good she is on writing two different kinds of writing. She does really well to me, and that is stories and ones like this where you have to, like, kind of dig deep into that darker side of yourself. As Babbler mentioned, there's kind of almost a sense of loathing, and there's this sense of despair, and as you mentioned, the struggle with PTSD, cauterizing all sense of self-preservation. Sometimes it just seems as if the best you can do is just emotionally survive. And I also like Medusan tendrils of dark fire writhe around my poisoned head. The whole idea that if you look at yourself, truly look at yourself, that you're going to turn to stone emotionally. That's kind of what I get from that. I think it's a wonderful, thought-provoking, emotionally dark write and very well done.
Great comment, guys. That was a pretty powerful piece all by itself. And I'll go, that's just another one.
Just so you know, Rex, I am back online and can go back to posting links.
Well, I've just grabbed the next one. The Whom Do You Want It to Be Read By? It's Sandy G. And it is called... All right.
Oh, see, I already beat you.
Okay. So, whom are we going to mean?
And I'll actually give this one a read. And Downhill Is Always the Easy Way by Sandy G. And it goes like this. While fruit of a dying democracy lies frozen, inert and untitled in frosted ground, we stare mute into mirrors cracked and broken, lie of only yesterday cloud, the last reflection. Fallow farmers are greasing evil curling plows, empowered by slogan banners and vulgarity, stirrupy with lies enough to paint the eagle red, gas bubbles rise meekly from the molten masses. Protesters promptly arrested and sent to prison. Past successes rinsed away are languished, understated. Nostalgic sighs of soldiers are heard and silenced. False futures now exploding, equity forgotten. The will is not extrasensuous as earthen embryos to be buried in refuse or sold in parts and pieces. Inept dreamers dreaming, power mongers scheming, making haste to expedite interment or transaction. Seated among captains of lies, spoilers of innocence, watching beauty betrayed, running off to nowhere, on treadmills of fear, gymnasiums of illusion, waiting for the flowers of false promise to fade and die. End poem.
Great read by Pam. And Sandy took a different tack to that quote. We burn so hard, but we shed so little light. It makes us crazy and sad. There's a heavy bite in this one. That fourth stanza. The will is not extraneous as earth and embryos. We buried in refuse or sold in parts and pieces. In that dream is dreaming, power mongers scheming, making haste to expedite interment or transaction. And yeah, that last line, she offers up the fear corn. Treadmills of fear through gymnasiums of illusion. It's a heavy bite in this one. Nicely done, Sandy. Thank you. All right. Faisy, what do you think?
I really, really loved the line, on treadmills of fear through gymnasiums of illusion. I don't know. That line just stood out to me as really creative and it brings it the concept to life. I enjoyed the whole thing, but that line in particular just stuck with me.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, Faisy. And Babla, how about you?
I really liked this piece. You know, there's a lot of statements on the current state of the world here, you know, and how people are running in circles and working really hard to get nowhere. Yeah, you know, to feed the liars and fat cats and burning themselves out without creating any goodness in the world, and in some cases contributing to the problem. And I really loved the use of alliteration in here. There's a lot of, you know, like fallow farmers, protesters promptly, you know, dreamers dreaming. It creates like a nice, really well-crafted piece.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Babla. And Pam, you got to read it.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. I really like this one. I'll have to read more of Sandy G. She's got some really hard-hitting lines in here that make us take a look at society and ourselves. And a great opening line, while fruit of a dying democracy lies frozen, inert, and untitled in frozen ground. I really liked that. And let's see, nostalgic sighs of soldiers are heard and silenced, false futures now exploding, equity forgotten. You know, we forget the price that soldiers have paid. So I thought that was just a beautiful, heartfelt line. And this was, as the Faziana said, a wonderful write all the way through. Another one I really liked was On Treadmills of Fear Through Gymnasiums of Illusion. That whole idea of performing in somebody else's circus, you know, being the monkey, the dancing monkey, and, you know, just running on those treadmills, never really getting anywhere, but, you know, just biting onto the illusion that we are getting somewhere. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Stuck in the moose jaw of a hamster wheel.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, where would you like to go next?
All right, up next we have, all right, let's see, what do we have next? Paste it. And The Armor of Righteousness by Seedhaven. And let's see here, looking, Babbler, would you give that a read for us, please?
All right, The Armor of Righteousness by Seedhaven. Fire bright and fast, he falls like stars. He does like streaks of flame and vengeance upon the host of hell. Demon bones break like ice over water. Their flesh rips like muslin, bearing souls, the light they never wanted. Wings spattered with blood that was burned black by the fires below, skin and membranes in his feathers. He comes like starfall, like a swan. His deathbringer grace is implacable as the walls of Eden, eternal as the stars. He remains immaculate in his filth, for righteousness is his crown of stars, his dripping blade, his essence, and his rage. End poem.
Great read, Babba. Thank you very much. And Essie took, angels have very nasty tempers, especially when they're feeling righteous. All right, Pam, you get the lead.
Well, first of all, excellent read there, Babbler. Oh, wow, this demon bones break like ice over water, flesh rips like muslin, bearing souls of the light they never wanted. I like those lines because it really speaks to me about how so many people push their particular brand of religion on to people that they never asked for. And I also like the fire blows skin and membranes in its feathers. He comes like starfall, like a swan. His deathbringer grace is implacable as the walls of Eden. That whole idea, and to me anyways, of that we all serve a purpose, even the fallen angels. I thought, and his rage was a strong line to end on, with that, it really speaks boldly about how bold and elegant way to speak about people who are consumed by anger when what they really should be doing is worrying about loving their fellow man. Just an excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Faisy, how about you?
I really love Pam's interpretation of this being about, like, people who take religious zealotry too far, and they're focused on punishing others rather than and set the example themselves. I liked the strong image of demon bones break like ice over water. Their flesh rips like muslin bearing souls. Especially like ice over water. There's something like really striking about that image.
Thank you, babe. It's that sound when you put ice in a glass and then you pour something over it that's almost equally cold, and you get that crack, crack. That's that nice touch from those bones break like ice over water. It's got a distinctive sound. Babla, how about you?
Let me know if you can't hear me over the train going by. I've got a really loud train at the moment. But I guess I took this in a different way. I really took it more as the religious poem, the vengeance of an angel, not as a negative thing, but as the, you know, casting out the darkness and literal demons. And I thought it was an absolutely beautiful portrayal. I was also drawn to that same stanza, but I really liked their flesh rips like muslin. You know, that sound. Like, I don't know if you've ever ripped muslin, but it tears very easily, and it makes, like, this just ripping noise. And I just thought the imagery and the sound of that was just perfect. And just some of this, you know, he remains immaculate in his filth. For righteousness is his crown of stars, his dripping blade, his essence, and his rage. You know, so he's still immaculate despite being covered in blood and guts from murdering demons, because that's how an angel operates. I just thought this was visually fantastic, and the word choice was really good, and it felt very fantasy almost to me, but in a very Christian kind of way. I really liked this piece.
Oh, I like that. Fantasy. It's got that almost Sin City motif, that kind of black and white visual with little touches of color where it needs to be placed perfectly. That's how this kind of works, and it does. I like the literality in it because it walks that realm. You got nice touches, the wings spattered with blood that was turned black by the fires below, skin and membranes and his feathers. He comes like starfall, like a swan, back again to that kind of immaculate thought that he rolls into the next stanza. He remains immaculate in his filth, so, and the dripping blade. Great touches, but it also works on another level with people who think they are holier than thou, offering up the same thought. Not in the literality, but as an extended metaphor, using the voice, their words, and cutting people to ribbons online, so to speak. So it does work on both levels because he's offered it up in such a nice manner. And Pam, did I get you to comment?
Yes, I commented first.
Ah, okay. Then we're coming back to you.
Yeah, remember, did I read? No, I didn't. Okay, but I did comment first. All right, and before we move on to the next poem, I would like to mention that Fill My Eyes is running a contest for Wednesday's show and also has a topic board up and is in need of rights for that, if anybody's interested. So just putting that word out there.
Break out your center pen.
That's right. That's right. And up next is Stripes by Pentel 3. And it goes like this. Striped light through bars, I am condemned, confined, condemned as before. Now no more reason why. I think I am going to die. My limbs shake. My heart breaks. I made a mistake. Harshness all my life. I have not seen the light. I see others here with the same plight. Bare floor, a bowl, a rug. No less, no more. The noise of protest quelled with blows. I wanted my babies to stay, but he came and took them away. I could not help it. I bit. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And Pam took, being with people makes me vomit. I don't like them. I never did. And Faisy, why don't we start with you?
This is intense. The way that it describes, like, the physical reaction to the emotion, my limbs shake, my heart breaks, like that shaky kind of feeling like you're going to die, panic attack feeling, I think this is about being in jail. The stripes, which is like the old school kind of version of like the prison uniform. I don't think they actually wear those anymore. And that it's through the bars, and the children have been taken away. And that I could not help it. I bit. It's like she snapped. And that's really intense. But it seems right with the quote. People make me vomit. I don't like them. And it's like they there's that snapping point when you hate everyone. So it's quite the storytelling poem with big feelings.
Excellent. Thank you, Faisy. I like that. And Babla, how about you?
I took this as a mother dog, a street dog, you know, abused by people, having a litter out in the streets. People came to get her puppy, and she bit him. And now she's at the pound.
Ooh.
A bare, cold floor, a bowl, a rug, no less, no more. And every time she barks, she gets hit.
I like that interpretation, and it makes a whole lot of sense. Just you pointing out that bear called for a bowl of rug, the more or less, the noise of protest quells with bros. I wanted my baby to say, wow, yeah, I think you nailed that one, Babla. Thank you very much. Pam, you got to read it.
Yeah, I have to admit, I'm thinking that with the bare cold floor, bowl, and a rug, that Babbler definitely nailed that. I will say, though, that it's so subtle that really every line doesn't specifically, it could easily apply to how people are treated who go to jail, especially women, and how women are treated in mental institutions. And, you know, and so it's definitely one of those nicely layered rights. I definitely have to say kudos to Babbler for catching that little detail. I also have to say kudos to PenPal for only offering it up in somewhat that one subtle line, and so that we really not only look at the way animals are treated, but we also look at the way humans are treated. Just a wonderful, and what Fabian, I think, used the word intense like about two or three times, and I'll add it about a fourth and fifth time. Definitely an intense right. So,
absolutely.
Very well done.
It does work on Babla's thought, and Faisy offered up one word that kind of struck me. This kind of walks that note. She mentioned the striped up top and the old prison uniforms, how they used to be black and white stripes. And I thought orange is the new black. So this work does work on that level of also being treated like a dog behind bars.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. We will go ahead and finish up with one last poem, and the rest little bit we have left will be carryovers for next week. Up next is Prompt 7 by Chris Bond. And Rex, go ahead, give that a read for us, please.
Prompt 7 by Chris Bond. Look at that. The grim reality, big and bold. It was unwanted to wake up. Reality is worse than any bad dream. Nightmares are a walk in the park compared to the suffering and angst life can bring. At every twist and turn, I yearn for the sanctuary of nightmares. At least I'm tucked up and warm in bed, much preferable to the instead of facing that grim reaper of reality. And poem. All right, Pam, It's a good afternoon thought for you. What do you think?
Oh, I like this. Reality is worse than any bad dream. Nightmares are a walk in the park. The whole idea that you'd rather curl up in bed and go back to those nightmares than face that. I like how he says, facing the grim reaper of reality. This is an excellent dark brevity that packs quite a punch about the idea of just trying to hide away from life because it's just too much. So, excellent write.
Nicely said. It reminds me of something I used to see about 50 years ago. Hey, stop the world. I want to get off.
I remember
Stacey,
that.
How about you? how about you, Faisy?
It kind of reminds me of the professor in Futurama, where he's like, I don't want to live on this planet anymore, which is his response to, like, almost everything. But, yeah, it feels like that. I always related to the professor, and then, like, no matter what they ask him to do, he's like, but I'm already in my pajamas, which is the only thing he wears, like, the entire season, like, four seasons or whatever. I feel like I am the professor. But anyway, off of that tangent, I really loved the line, I yearn for the sanctuary of nightmares. I feel like that one line sums it up. And it's really powerful and unfortunately, I think, true for a lot of people right now that sometimes the nightmares are more tolerable than life. Again, I'm going to say intense. Intense seems to be my word of the night. It's very intense, and I like the way that it was put together.
Thank you, Paige. And Barbara, how about you?
Yeah, I just liked this piece. You know, the idea that at least a nightmare isn't real. You know, you're awake in a bad reality. Unfortunately, that's real. You know, no matter how bad the dream is, at least it's not something that's happening. So, you know, it really paints a nasty picture of the world. But for some, that's, you know, how life feels. So I really enjoyed it. I think it was well articulated, unlike me at the moment. I thought that was a nice brevity about a dark topic.
Well, thank you very much, Babbler. I had a great night with Clive there, Pam. This was a wonderful show. And Faisy, Babbler, thank you very much for joining us. We had some laughs, some very interesting and diverse voice in the views of that. So had a grand time all the way around. Thank you very much. Y'all were blarvers. So we got to do this again.
Next week.
Absolutely. And in the meantime,
yes.
Have a lovely evening, ladies.
You too, Rex. Great show. Good night, everyone.
Good night, gang.